My name is Ed Goldberg, and I'm speaking with Eric Spitznagel. Eric, welcome to KBOO and welcome to Portland.
Thank you so much for having me.
Have you been to Portland before?
I was here once for a book tour, but they kind of grabbed me off the plane, threw me into a couple of radio interviews, and I was back on the plane out of there. So I never got a chance to see it before.
Yeah, it's like being kidnapped by the Taliban.
It is. Yeah, it is, only a little less fun.
A little less fun. The title of your book is Fast Forward, Confessions of a Porn Screenwriter.
Yes.
Now, I mean, you've got to say what fast forward is. I mean, all of us know what fast forward is, but what does it mean in the context of pornography?
That is actually an industry term for porn screenplays. They're called fast forwards because an audience is expected to stop paying attention when the actors are talking. So your irrelevance as a writer is kind of written into the job description, which doesn't do much for your self-esteem or your sense of, I'm doing something useful here. No one is paying attention, Mr. Writer. That's what we're being told.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Well, this is endemic in the movie business anyway. There's the old joke about the bimbo actress who was so stupid she slept with the screenwriter.
Yeah, no places are more contempt for the writer than the porn business.
Yeah,
I mean, I would be lectured by directors who tell me, you got too many complicated words here. I mean, if an actor tried to speak these, especially a porn actor, their synapses catch on fire. They don't know what's happening. One director actually said, like, count out the syllables. You know, one, two, three is fine. One, two, three, four. That's too many. They're going to get confused, and then they can't perform, and nobody gets paid.
Yes, you could have a screenplay written by a monkey and a counting horse.
You could.
Yeah.
You could, actually.
It's the Ed Sullivan Show. You ready? Okay, before... Before we go too far with this, let's back up and say, how in the world did a nice young man like yourself get into the dirty movie business?
Well, first of all, as presumptuous, you think I'm a nice young man, but I appreciate it.
I always like to give my guests the benefit of the doubt.
That's sweet of you. Mm-hmm. Well, I went out to L.A. with the intention of being a screenwriter, a legitimate screenwriter. And once I got out there, it was a little more difficult than I thought. I was having some problems getting screenplays sold. So I was talking to some of my comedy writing friends. I'd come from Chicago and worked at Second City.
That's, you know, allow me to stop you there.
Yes.
This is some kind of a holy grail to have worked at Second City.
It kind of is.
Yeah.
A lot of very famous people, Steve Carell, Steve Colbert, Tina Fey.
Now let's all go back to Nichols and May.
John Belushi, yeah. Dan Aykroyd, Harold Ramis. A lot of great people came out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them managed not to write porn. So
most of them?
Yes, most of them, as far as we know. So I was talking to some of my comedy writing friends, and they're like, well, you know what? You could take a day job while you wait for your big break, or, you know, there's great money to be made in writing porn. So why don't you just throw off a couple scripts, make yourself a couple thousand dollars, you'll be fine, pay your rent. It's easy. So I was thinking, you know, how hard could that be? It'd be kind of a funny story. You know, I write a script and, you know, a couple hours, I'm done with it. The problem happened for me after like my second or third script. I started to take myself a little too seriously. I started to think like, I want this to be good. I want to write the great American porno. And even worse, I wanted to write the great American porno comedy, which kind of assumes that there's an audience out there that wants to laugh and masturbate at the same time, which I don't think they do. I don't think that's possible.
Gee whiz, I don't know. I don't want to tell any tales of myself.
Yeah, that might be too much information.
Too much information. I know from what little I know about screenwriting that in the legit movie business, it's usually works out to about a minute a page. So if you have a 120-page screenplay, it's roughly going to be a 2-hour movie.
Exactly. Yes.
What describe for us the difference between a regular screenplay and a pornography screenplay?
It's more or less the same, except that the sex scenes aren't written out. You pretty much have a shorthand where it's SS number 1, 2, or 3, that's sex sequence 1, so the sequential order. How many people are in the scene? Are they men, women, couple men? And after that, everything is left up to the performer. So it kind of normally, yes, that one page equals a certain number of minutes theory applies, but because so much of an adult film is sex, and that doesn't, when you have one line there that may translate to 5 minutes, 10 minutes, you never know what the director is going to do. So it's hard to judge that. Most of the time, most porn screenplays are roughly 20 pages,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes a little less, sometimes just a touch more. But you as long as you get like 4 to 5 sex scenes in every script, they're fine with that. So yeah, it is difficult to figure out exactly how to tell a story in a porn film using that formula, because you don't know what the timing is. It's usually the third act comes, you know, after the first hour and 15, because there's nothing, that timing is completely left out of a porn script.
Well, I only know this from books, of course. You understand, but sex flicks seem to be the same thing. The pizza guy comes, the cable guy comes, the masseuse comes, and they walks in the front door, and 5 minutes later, everybody's got their clothes off.
So that is true.
Why do they need screenwriters at all?
They really don't. But there are a lot of directors in porn who really like to think that they're artists. So that they like I did, like to think that maybe there's an audience out there that is going to think, you know, I want to see how this thing ends. I'm going to stick around after I take care of my business.
I want to see how Act 3 resolves the action. Yeah. Yeah, right.
And there was one director who I met with who actually pitched me on doing a porno remake of Kurosawa's Rashomon.
Fabulous.
One would think, but his pitch was, you know, like, hey, multiple points of view, subjective nature of truth, just add a lot of people having sex and it writes itself. It's perfect. Mm-hmm. So the idea that anybody would rent a porn to find out about the subjective nature of truth is a little troubling. I don't think that's what the typical porn viewer is looking for.
Yeah, but a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down.
Could be. Maybe it helps.
Yeah. Maybe we should do like the entire works of Soren Kierkegaard with SS1, you know.
As a porno, yes. Yeah, okay. Then you're like, wow, I'm a little less lonely and I've learned something.
But there is something we do know from an actual film called Caligula. Now, this is a movie I actually saw.
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah.
And the reason I saw it, it had a great cast.
Right.
Malcolm McDowell was in it.
Yeah.
And was it Ralph Richardson or John Gielgud, one of those guys?
I think it was John Gielgud.
John Gielgud, that's who it was. And it was about Caligula, who was probably the most corrupt Roman emperor of all of them, which is really saying something.
Right.
And So I went and watched this movie, and I figured it would be enhanced if I took some acid. So I took some acid.
Well, of course.
Of course, yeah. But the thing about the movie was that what you call the fast forward, the scenes of exposition where the actors are actually acting,
right?
Weren't that good.
Are they ever, really?
And well, you know, but think about what you're dealing with here. You're dealing with some great actors.
See, that's the, yeah,
and serious, that's the serious screenwriters, assuming they're serious screenwriters.
Right.
Of course, it's a Bob Guccione project, so, you know, okay. But then ultimately what it all devolves down to is sex scenes, including, I think, the biggest single orgy ever filmed. With
it
hundreds
is,
of
yes.
couples. Hundreds,
I've heard that.
So it all comes down to that anyway, doesn't it?
That is true. Even during the so-called golden age of porn, The stories, if you really look back at them, like Deep Throat was like a really terrible pun. Behind the Green Door, Marilyn Chambers gets kidnapped, and then the next thing you know, she's having sex with a guy in a trapeze. I mean, it's not really that complicated a story. I can't think of one porno story or plot that I've ever seen or heard about where I was like, that's fascinating.
Well, no,
that is really good.
Harry Reams had a gift for comedy that he had a – I don't know how to describe it, but he had a wry presence on the screen no matter what he was doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And he even got a couple of roles in straight films. So
there was a little bit of crossover there, but most of the porn roles he had, he didn't have much very funny to say. He didn't have some very humorous, well-written lines.
So the golden age of porn was like 2 years?
And well, technically it's called 74 to 83, I guess.
Long?
Is when. Yeah, well, that's what porn people would tell you. It was a couple months
before it went to videotape from
when it was still shot in film, and
exactly.
And pretty much every porn film had a script and a big premiere with red carpets. So yeah,
what about the I heard about this. I never watched any of these films, but I want to say about 10 or 15 years ago, a bunch of women producers and directors decided that they were going to create more romantic porn films with stories and actual emotional content.
Right.
Whatever happened with that?
It actually, from what I understand, I don't have my finger on the pulse of what's happening here. But from what I understand, and I was told, it kind of disappeared because a lot of people liked the idea of romantic porn in theory, but they weren't the ones really out there buying it.
Right.
You know, there was a lot written about, you know, the feminist porn and the porn written for and produced for women. But in the end, the people really driving the market are the frat dudes who, you know, go and buy 10 videos and sit at home with a beer and feel sorry for themselves. And they don't really care about story. They don't want the romance. I mean, the female audience is out there, but it's not really what's keeping...
They don't buy the stuff.
No, they're not keeping the industry alive.
Yeah.
So that's why we're going back to no story whatsoever. I mean, most porn these days is like a couple guys in a van driving around with a camcorder picking up women at the 7-Eleven parking lot.
Yeah. What's the role of the San Fernando Valley? I mean, it's pretty much, I don't want to say 100%, but I bet it's over 90% of the pornography in this
at least is
shot in the San Fernando Valley.
Yeah, I think it's a safe distance from L.A., from Hollywood, where they're not really that tolerant of it. And there was some resistance at first in the Valley, I think. I mean, that's where a lot of busts were happening in the 80s. But right now, I think it's just a comfortable home because the porn doesn't make its presence too obvious. They keep the studios unmarked. Or there's not a lot of flashing neon everywhere. And
you had some trouble even finding the places where they were filming these.
Yes,
days.
Yeah, trying to track them down because they're all warehouses or they look like, you know, abandoned factories, whether it's just an office or where they're shooting the film. So, yeah, it's very I think the Valley appreciates the people who live there, appreciate the fact that the porn industry doesn't rub its presence in their face. It's not being too obvious.
For some people, especially if you're younger, I mean, young men think of almost nothing else except sex.
And
I recall this. It's something I have to remember way back. But did it seem to you from your experiences here that it takes very little of a total immersion in this stuff to get old?
Huh. That's an interesting question. I think so. I think it does take very little to get old in terms of
boring,
of bitter,
and
not really enjoying.
Yeah, you're just looking at your watch and you're watching a whole day of people screwing, and then you just look at your watch and say, "Gee, is I really need to be out of here?"
That's true. I think it starts to become not just a job, but everyone involved in making porno kind of loses interest in sex at all. I mean, when I went to a couple porn sets, everyone involved couldn't have been more bored and less interested. In fact, there was, you know, one lighting guy who was just holding up a lighting instrument just a few feet away from these people having sex, and he was just eating some chili, just pounding away at chili. Just couldn't have been more less interested in what was happening, less aroused by it, not even looking up, for a quick peek anymore. I mean, just I think it makes you a little dead inside about sex. All the mystery is gone, and it doesn't seem that alluring, so I mean, for me, it happened very quickly. When I was first invited to a porn set, I was like, yeah, oh, this is going to be fun. I can't believe it. And then about, you know, half an hour into it, I was like, this is kind of icky and weird. And there's that odor in the air where, they're in the studio, which I don't think they ever clean it. They might hose it down every couple of months. But there's nothing sexy about it. It's just – and after a while, you know, like you get – you get done with this and go back home and you're like, I never want to have sex again. I'm pretty much just done with it in general. I want to be a Ken doll. Because, not only – seeing it so often not only takes the fun out of it, but it's too much information. The porn is really about, you know, putting the bright lights on everything. And when that all that mystery is gone and it's just it becomes gynecological and not
actually. It's worse than that because what it does is terrify a lot of young men who haven't had much experience with sex.
Yes,
into
yes.
Thinking that I could never do that. I will never be like that. I will never. These women will never throw themselves at me. I am.
That's true.
I might as well become a monk.
That's very true. And some of these positions they have to do now, or it just gets more and more extreme, where it's 500 person gangbangs and bizarre positions involving thighs and pushed in directions that I don't think the body was meant to be pushed in. It's not natural at all.
Let me remind our listeners, I'm speaking with Eric Spitznagel. Eric is the author of Fast Forward, Confessions of a Porn Screenwriter, and it's published by Manic D Press. Describe the scene of the women on the trampoline.
Well, I was commissioned to write a script for this director named Raymond, who is a very violent character. Who
was he really tough, or was he just was it all a front?
I think it was a front. He just wanted me to know who was boss. He would walk around with a golf club and take swings. You know, just close enough to let you know that he could do it. But I think it actually was a front, that he really – he was all bark and no bite. But he asked me – I was originally hired by him to write a script called Butt Crazy, Part 13.
Which is in the book.
Included in the book.
Yeah.
Because it was never produced because he was very upset with me. There was so much talking, he said. I was ruining the Butt Crazy franchise. He said, write me 20 pages about butts. That's all I want. Sexy women with butts. And they're saying something funny. So I turned in the script. Far too much talking. Blah, 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 blah. He just says, no way. We're never going to do this. Start over. We have, we just got this house in Malibu. So I need a script that takes place in a Malibu home with, you know, give me a scene on a tennis court and in the gazebo and in a couple of bedrooms. And turn in my first draft of that. And he's like, again, this is horrible. Why the talking? What's with the dialogue? What made you think we needed dialogue? So he came to me with the concept of make it like the James Coburn flick In Like Flint. So, you know, women doing judo and jumping on trampolines and they're training for something. Like, don't even tell us what it is. They're just some kind of training and they happen to be naked for it and they're doing karate and just all kinds of exercises where it just gets weird and there's some secret agent there. I don't even remember what the story's about anymore. We had this kind of elaborate set put together at this Malibu estate with trampolines. And you get like 30 to 40 porn actresses on a trampoline, which is he wanted like more girls up there. This is fantastic.
This sounds like the Hindenburg about to happen.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We were pretty certain that someone was going to die, especially not just having all these women, but all these women with fake and huge breasts. With, you know, they don't really cooperate with gravity. So kind of bouncing against each other, and it was just disturbing, and you knew there was going to be some kind of tragedy happening very soon, and everybody was very upset. And then the helicopters came. A lot of times on the outdoor porn sets, helicopters come by because people get the binoculars out. And he starts, you know, Raymond starts screaming at the helicopter and waving his golf club, I'll get you, and throwing things at it. And so it, to some extent, that day for me was like a Fellini fever dream. It was, you know, it wouldn't have surprised me if midgets started coming out and it was like all of a sudden it became black and white and, oh my God, I have no idea what's happening anymore. So it got very surreal.
Now, your wife went out to L.A. with you.
Yes, she
and
did.
She is also a comedy writer or a screenwriter?
She is a comedy writer and a movie producer.
Movie producer.
Yeah.
But she didn't get work doing that. I mean, you know, in a way, I wish you had given us more in the book about this, about your poor wife's life as what?
As a game show contestant. That was her day job.
This is a career out there in L.A.
It can be. You could actually make fairly good money, assuming. But it's a dangerous day job because your paycheck depends on if you actually win. You could go home empty-handed and like, oh, well, I got this synthesizer, so that'll pay for something. I think we did a lot of eBay because of that.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, she was because I was writing screenplays and trying to get them sold. And this is before, you know, I started writing porn. We had no real income coming in because she was trying to get some jobs as a producer and sell her scripts. So we needed something to come in. So she got her first gig on Ben Stein's Money and got a little cash there. And that led to other game shows and other game shows. So, yeah, it was like she couldn't really complain too much about like, why are you going to break porno to make a living? Well, you're going to Wheel of Fortune. So it's, you know, one half of it. What's the difference there?
People do the circuit. I mean, it's like it's like going on tour.
You have to have a certain amount of time between each show because they don't want people to pick up on like, I know I've seen that person before.
Right.
But that as for me doing porn, she thought it was funny at first. In the beginning, she was like, that's actually humorous. That's sure. What the heck? Spend a couple hours, make some money. It's not like you're actually, you know, going to be hanging out with these people.
Speaking about hanging out with these people, well, I'm probably going to ask you about the party, but
yes.
The first thing, I mean, this is, I want to tread on this delicately because I don't want people to get the wrong idea of what I'm thinking about this. But it occurs to me that the people that you met who were in the porn industry, and I'm talking about the production end, talking about the actors, they seem to be people who have had a rough go in life and have decided that the only way that they can make it is to sell themselves on camera.
I think so.
Is that true? I mean,
it's hard to generalize because I met many different types of people. But a lot of the actresses, well, clearly you don't end up in porn if you had a good life. If you have a healthy idea of sexuality, you're not going to, end up being a porn actress. Let me put it this way. I don't think they were doing it just for a paycheck. I think they were doing it because they had a warped idea of what sex was. I actually saw an actress show up on the set of one of my movies, and the director told her, you know what, we had to cut your scene, but I'm still going to pay you, no big deal, so I'll just – here's your check, but you don't have to actually do the sex scene. And she was profoundly upset and kept arguing with them, like, I still want to do this scene. Can I just take the guy and go – use one of the spare rooms? Can that happen? And really, really upset and crying about it. And she was really hoping that morning was going to be spent having sex with an anonymous stranger.
It's like it defines her reality.
Yes,
her own personhood is involved in.
That's her entire self-esteem is built around having sex with strangers.
I mean, I don't know if you know this, and you can tell me no if that's a good answer, but do you have any an idea that perhaps these people were exploited and abused way before they ever got into the porn business?
I don't know for a fact, but one does get that sense that somewhere around along the way, they sex got tied up in them being accepted. So whether it's a father, a boyfriend, I would have to assume that. It can't just be wrong information. There has to be someone actually abused them.
Mm-hmm. One of the great things about being in a movie, I'm told, is the is the wrap party, where after the movie's wrapped up, the cast and the crew get together and boogie down. You went to a porn flick wrap party. What was that like?
I did. That was very disturbing, because when porn actors when they celebrate, when the porn industry in general celebrates, they like to really dress up in every freaky costume imaginable. They'll come in, cowboy hats or dressed as wizards, but always with some sexual, slant on it. Like, I'm a cowboy, but one who wears a codpiece. I'm a wizard, but the nipples are cut out in my robe. So it's really freakish, and it's like a Ren Faire, but a Ren Faire going horribly wrong. I mean, when I walked into this party in Hollywood, I really felt like, have I taken drugs and not realized it? Because this seems like a bad hallucination. And once the actors get pumped full of drugs, that can really, really be disturbing, because their inhibitions are kind of low anyway. But when they're drinking a lot and snorting coke or passing the eight ball around, then they just don't care who's around. They're going to have sex with whoever happens to be in front of them, and sometimes in the parking lot. And that's nothing you want to see. That's nothing. You just kind of stand in the background and go, that's good syphilis. It wafts in the air. Gonorrhea.
Do you feel as though you've become, for want of a better term, more prudish, more conservative?
Yes.
Since your experience?
A knee-jerk reaction to that has been – being a little bit more prudish, a little less less. I mean, before going into this, I had this, I think, the standard male curiosity about porn. I used to, enjoy it quite a bit. But now, not so much. Now, seeing what goes into it and just the horror involved in trying to work with these people and seeing how damaged they are. Once you get to know the human being behind some of these films, you're like, wow, you have so much baggage and there's so much – screwed up with you. It's hard to look at them as fantasy again and go, I can't divorce myself from that, because I know behind the scenes there's some very troubled people.
Well, the common cliche about actors is that they're needy people anyway. Yes. Otherwise, why would they be out there, demanding attention and craving it so much?
That's very true.
And in pornography acting, quote unquote, the need must be that much more bizarre, I suppose.
Yes, yeah. It's not just wanting to be loved as a person, but wanting to be desired. wanting, you know, everybody in the world to want them as an object, or want them as to possess them, not just as a personality, but as a partner.
At the end of the book, you're leaving L.A. without too much compunction, going back to Chicago. Is that where you're based now?
I was in Chicago for a while. Now I'm back in California, but in San Francisco. Okay. I try to stay out of L.A.
Where no sex ever happens.
Never. That's the great thing about San Francisco. Yeah. They're very, very conservative there.
Did you make any friends in the porn business that you've maintained, or have you cut yourself off from that totally?
I felt like I had to cut myself off. Because once you get involved with them, especially with the directors, they're very insistent on keeping that relationship going. So they'll keep calling you with like, I need a script. I'll pay you $500. Just write me 20 pages. And that's hard to resist. So the friends I still have there who are in any way involved in adult films were like my friend Tim, who got me, who first sucked me into the industry.
And he's still doing it.
So to speak, yes. He's actually still involved in it, and he's a legitimate screenwriter. He's had a couple of indie films made, does a lot of TV writing work. But I think it's just so easy at the end of the month, if you can't quite pay your bills and you get that call and you know how easy it would be to just churn out a screenplay in a couple hours, that's like, oh. It's like if you worked at a pharmacy and you had an addiction to pills.
Yes.
Like you could say, oh, this is just one more. I'm just going to take one more. You have to leave the pharmacy or you're never going to quit that addiction.
We only got about a minute left. But and again, if you don't have an opinion of this, that's fine too. But there's been something going on the last couple of years. And as a movie reviewer, I've seen this where actual sex acts are in quote-unquote mainstream films, usually indies or French films.
Yeah.
This Brown Bunny guy who actually got Chloe 70 to perform a sex act.
An oral sex act with a very visual finish is what I've heard. I haven't seen the film. But
neither have I. I refuse to see any of his movies. But that's beside the point. I guess where I'm going with this is there yet a possibility that the real film industry and the porn film industry will create some kind of a hybrid that will be acceptable to, if not a mass audience, at least the art house audience?
That's possible. That is possible. It's difficult, though, because as the kind of midway point between mainstream films and porn, whether that can exist, because it seems to be pulling a person's brain in different directions. Because porn, in essence, is not about thinking. It's about visual stimulus. And see, I don't know how that can work. I'd be curious to see if it does. But it seems to me that as soon as you have a hardcore sex, the story disappears. Even if the story is fantastic, the audience gets kind of confused, and it's hard to concentrate and to care about the story anymore. To me, writing porn was always like porn. To me, is the creative equivalent of greeting cards. That you can take a greeting card and fancy it up and get lots of language. You could add a plot to a greeting card, but in the end, all you need is a setup and a payoff. That's really it. The setup and the punchline and the greeting card is done. The simpler, the better. And I think that's what works for porn. And maybe in the end, you're not supposed to have a story. I mean, that's I don't think that's what most people want. They can argue about it. It seems like we should have porn with some compelling plots and stories. Why is that not possible? But I think in the end, porn is always going to be greeting cards, and that's all they can be and all they should be. Maybe that's their only purpose.
I hope someone from Hallmark is listening. this has been a lot of fun. The book is fun too, especially the screenplay at the end. It's called Butt Crazy.
For educational purposes.
For education, yes. It's better than those question and answer things they throw in for book clubs at the end of books.
That's true.
Yeah.
I hope people do stage productions of these.
I would like to
Butt
see
Crazy.
That. Yeah, high school could do it.
They really could.
The title of your book is actually Fast Forward Confessions of a Porn Screenwriter. Eric Spitznagel, it was fun talking to you. Come back again.
Thank you so much, Ed.